Yo, check this out. This is Fresh Get Out the China Man with the 2-Live Crew.
Yo, what's up, y'all? It's me, DMC.
What's up, y'all? This is the boy, Master P.
Yo, check us out. Chuck the Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yellow from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DLC.
This is your boy, C-Murray.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker.
This is your boy, DJ Paul KOL 365.
Young Dizzy Bomb.
Vice Womp.
Yo, this is DJ Ready Brand.
What up? This is the real Rick Ross. You listen to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
This is a show that shows no limits, broadcast nothing but the real. Interviews with legendary artists, still got love for the underground feel. Rappers with records revealing and shit, and rappers are coming up, get them put on. We needed a platform to fight the mainstream. The show that you need to be on. Hit up UGS for life on the screen and follow with Wizard.com. For all of your needs, production and mixing and mastering, graphics and shadow design. Check out the archives and touch with the shows. Study your content and unity. Through everything free to download and stream. Oh yeah, we deserve the real review.
I'm talking about what we brought up, it's we represent. All them chillers on the mic, and we should love to all your fans. Motherfuckers wanna hate, do your thing, you keep the focus. Bringing nothing but the rhythm, come and tune into the dopest.
I'm a man-made guy, crazy knocking all you rappers off.
Welcome to Murder Master Music Show. This episode 676. We got a guest that's not a stranger. He's been on before. And I tell you what, man, he's got a little something to do with the history of West Coast hip-hop. We're going to bring him on and tell you exactly, how much he has to do with it. I'm talking about Mr. Alonzo Williams, world-class record crew. How you doing, Alonzo?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. How you feeling today, Doc?
I'm doing real good, man, real good, and thank you for coming back on the show. But I was just telling the listeners, you got a little something to do with the history of West Coast hip-hop and, kind of break down your roots, because I know they go back to the 70s.
Man, as I'm working on my documentary, I forget how much shit I did back in the day. My roots go back to early 72, man. Trying to be a locker, trying to get on Soul Train. And it was once said that locking in California was one of the first steps into hip-hop. And ever since, man, I've been doing everything from trying to dance, DJing, running nightclubs, performing with groups, writing songs, creating record labels, distribution companies, whatever had to be done, I'm the one that I'm played a big role in getting it done.
A one-stop shop. I mean, you're the guy doing it all. At that particular time, back when you didn't have the convenience of the internet and all these programs and, the SoundClouds and, little graphic apps to make your album covers, how hard was it to handle all those, to wear all those hats at once?
You know what, man? That was my job. I was kind of lucky, dude. I had another source of income. Only took me work, had me working on the weekends, but that's what I did Monday through Friday. I had to go to the graphic designer, which was a buddy of mine, and he did everything by hand, all the album covers, everything. I take that stuff down to the printer, make the label for the records. Meanwhile, the plates being made not far from my house, and I already had a distribution network set up. When I used to work for a record company, so everything kind of gelled together, and it became my job. That was my job, to get things produced, to get things finished up, get things to the radio station, going to the radio station, dropping off mixes, promoting parties. It kept me busy, but I damn sure wasn't bored with it. That's for doggone sure. Never, no 2 days were alike.
Yeah, man. It sounds like you had a lot of fun doing it. At some point, eventually Dr. Dre comes along, you're already established on the L.A. scene, doing your thing, and you find talent in this young man, you give him an opportunity. What did you see in Dre, and how did you meet him?
Oddly enough, man, Dre and I grew up on the same block. I'm older than him, so I hung out with his uncles and aunties, but I didn't really know Dre until he came to the club when he was about 16. But like I said, his dad grew up on my block with me. His dad and my older sister were cool. And so when he came to the club, wanted to get in as a teenager, he kind of dropped them names on me. And because I recognized him, I showed him some love, although he wasn't dressed properly. I told him, go back home, get straightened out, come on back, and I'll let you in based on the fact that I know your people. And he came with Easy, of course, that night. And Dre came back the next night or next week or whatever the case may be, dressed properly. I let him in, but because Easy wasn't dressed properly, I made his ass stay outside. And that's been one of the crazy stories of West Coast hip-hop ever since.
Easy. So you met Easy and Dre at the exact same time then?
Yeah. They both came to my attention at the same time.
And now Dre, I'm saying, he eventually becomes part of your group. And at this time, Easy, I assume, had no intentions of having anything to do with rap at this time, right?
Nah, Easy was just on the sidelines watching us do our thing. He comes to the club, come to Dudo, Skate Land, whatever the case may be, and he was just Dre's friend. And he'd come by the house at some time, hang out or whatever, but he was watching us, watching me and watching us do our thing. And when his little business got kind of crazy, he wanted to get involved, but it was never from an artist perspective. It was just he wanted to be the businessman behind the label. And I hooked him up with all the stuff, the same people I was going through, the lawyers, the graphic designers, the same guy did Crew Cut Label, did the Ruthless Label. Same lawyer did my contract, did the Ruthless contracts. Same studio I recorded Record Crew stuff in. I took him down there, introduced him to Donovan, Audio Achievement. So I pretty much hand-carried him through his whole process of getting Ruthless Records up and started. And then eventually I hooked him up with Jerry Heller.
Yeah. The infamous meeting where, he broke some bread with you to sit down and talk to Jerry. I had Rendezvous on the show not too long ago, last year sometime, and he was saying in the beginning, him and Easy, before the music, they grew up together, they were friends.
Yeah.
Was he going to be part of Ruthless at some point in time?
He
as
was
far
the first,
as part owner or something?
I don't recall that part, man. I can't say about that. I know Rendezvous was damn sure scheduled to be one of the first artists on Ruthless. And they started working on some tracks, and I believe, don't hold me to this, but it's been a while now. I believe when he read the contract, he wasn't comfortable with the contract. Again, not understanding what he was getting into, the contract was a standard contract, but because most people don't understand what they get themselves into, they tend to, somebody tell you you're going to make a quarter of a record per single. That don't sound like a lot of money when you records singles are being sold for $4. So it sounds like you're getting ripped off, but if you understand the game, it's not that bad. But nonetheless, that was the original plan. I can't recall him ever being part of the actual label. I know that Dre, Yella, Arabian Prince, and Easy were supposed to be the owners of Ruthless, to my knowledge. That was a deal I recall sitting in on. And at some point in time, even that deal fell apart. So, there's a whole lot of stories out there. I don't know all of them.
Yeah, there's so many people involved. But you always seem to be, right there at the center at some point or another. A lot of roots come back to you. How does that make you feel all these years later, knowing that you had so much to do with the building blocks of the West Coast Hip Hop Foundation?
Well, you know what, man, it feels good to know that I played a major part in getting things done. I get it's kind of frustrating that the people who I help the most seem to have the shortest memories. But it is what it is, Doc.
Yeah. Well, history is set in stone. That's why we had Jerry Heller on, and we let him tell his history. Do you feel that some people, are kind of over the years have been silenced because their history it doesn't want to get out, or some people don't want to see their history get out?
Well, my history. They attempted to silence me at one point in time because I know everybody's backstory. And even you mentioned about the money with Jerry Heller. Easy, Jerry Mixon, like Easy gave me $750 to meet him. And well, that wasn't the case. Easy already owed me $500 for studio time. So, you know, he gave me an extra $250 to meet Jerry. Jerry didn't want to meet him. I had to push the issue. And when Jerry met him, he wasn't all in. He wasn't so in love with Easy like he claimed he was. I just met John McCarthy or something like that. That's some bullshit. He was nervous as hell. You know, and it pisses me off that I know the truth to all these cats, and everybody makes himself out to be a hero. I mean, I could be a hero if I wanted to be, but I'd be lying. I was just somebody that was I was just huffing like everybody else was. Wasn't nobody had no special insight or anything they could predict to say this was going to be that, because everybody was experimenting. The whole movement was experiment, and it worked, you know. Yeah. It started to work, and you know, it just amazes me that when people tell the story, they were so profound. They understood all this. That's some bullshit. You know, we were just trying to keep eating and not having to go to work. Okay, I set the example of working for yourself as an entrepreneur from the time I was about 22 years old. Was my last job. Folks were trying to do what I was doing, and I was just going with the flow. Because as a good entrepreneur, you got to know how to think on your feet, and you know sometimes you got to shift with the wind. When the club slowed down, you got to start making records, and you know that's what I started doing. And at one point, I was doing all of it, making records, doing gigs, and performing shows with world class record crew. So you know you got to be able to be creative and think on your feet and think and move on a dime. You know, yeah. It's just funny how everybody. Oh man. We saw this. No. That's bullshit, man. That's bullshit. And if it was around today, I tell man, you was Jerry Heller was nervous as hell to deal with Eazy-E because he was used to dealing with me and Egypt and Rudy from the Dream Team. And you know, he asked me a question one time. You know, how does a Jewish guy from the Valley deal with a bunch of black guys called niggas with attitudes? And I told him, I said, man, do that very carefully, Doc. Very carefully. You know, and for years, you know. For years, he was always saying, I work for Eric. When they was running over the CDs and they was running over shit, I work for Eric. I work for Ruthless. And at some point in time, that story changed. He became a part owner of Ruthless. So, you know, I understand that when that shit was, you know, when the shit was bad, he kept his distance. But when it got good, he was right there in the mix. And that's the real deal. Okay? And for me, I was never with the gangster movement, and I was never against the music per se, but I was definitely confused about the name because I'm a kid of the civil rights movement. You got to understand, I'm 8 years older than Dre and them, okay? So I have a different mindset when it comes to certain things. And for a group to be called niggas with attitude, for me, that wasn't gonna fly. I didn't see that happening. But again, what the fuck do I know? But that was just where I was raised, a wannabe Black Panther. I could not see a group named Niggas with Attitudes flying. That was just something I didn't see happening, and it worked for them. I'm happy for them, but again, you know, I was raised on a different situation. So for me not to understand that, for me, that was my mindset. And for them to do it, and it made it work for them through all the trials and tribulations, more power to them. But it's just amazing how everybody wants to play the part, play the role that, this was such a marketing plan, such a, you know, it may have been, but that was not the plan, Doc. That was it was an experiment that happened to work. That's all.
Well, yeah, definitely took off, but you know, a lot of people tend to forget when they think about the roots of West Coast hip hop. They forget about the cats like Ice-T and Fresh Kid Ice and the 2 Live Crew before they went down to Miami. They were there at Mecola.
You're damn right.
84, I believe, and then all the other guys he was mentioning too, you know, Egyptian Lover, you know, a lot of movements. You know what I'm saying? How much did those guys have a role to play as far as, you know what I'm saying, influencing the people that came after him, like the Dr. Dre's and the, you know what I'm saying, Ice Cube's and whatnot.
I mean, the crew that Egypt ran with Uncle Jam's Army was our direct competition. you know, we all were dance promoters back in the day. We all gave dances for a living. That was the hustle. Nobody sold dope. Our group didn't sell dope. We gave dances for a living. We had the DJ crews. I had my own sound system. I had my own light show. I got videos of us putting this shit together. So I would just go out and rent venues and pull up my truck, me and the fellas, pop out and throw up a party together in a matter of minutes. That's how we got the name Disco Construction and the Wrecking Crew. You know, Disco Construction would go out and book a party, book a venue, and the Wrecking Crew would go in there and throw the DJ lights up, the sounds, everything, and then the Wrecking Crew would tear that shit down and put it in the truck and take it back to the studio. So that's what we did. So, you know, Uncle Jam's Army was the same kind of thing, but Wrecking Crew was always self-contained. I had my own system, my own money. And then eventually I started controlling the venues because I got tired of, you know, trying to book around other people. So I just started cutting deals with club owners or venue owners, and I'd go long-term because I hate loading that shit up. And as simple as that. So we had our own competition. And then when the competition started moving towards records as opposed to music, we was right there with it because, again, I had my own money, and I didn't have to go to nobody and ask them for nothing. So we started doing underground mixes and started doing legit records. And because my last physical job was working for a record distributor, and just so happened the boy from Uncle Jam's Army, we worked together at the same place. So we both do the record game. So, we was grinding against each other to outdo each other because, you know, they camp had a bigger name for doing dances, but we blew up on the record scene. You know, and that's just how it went out.
Yeah, you guys, you know what I'm saying, you end up getting the deal and you know what I'm saying, making all kinds of moves. You know, let me go back a little bit, you know what I'm saying, you know, Fresh Kid Ice, Two Live Crew. Did you get to meet them guys at all?
Man, I think we had ran to McCullough a couple of times before they got with Luke. I never forget Don was Don McMillan, the guy who won McCullough, was tripping on them because they had a song called MFSB, Mother, Father, Sister, Brother. But they said it was motherfucking son of a bitch. And that's, at that time, that was some unheard of shit. Oh, man, come on, dude. That was like right, right. So, you know, we was in the wild, wild west of hip-hop, man. For real. Everything was anything that was decent. Was able to fly.
That's what I told Chris when he was here. Rest in peace. He not only did he help pioneer the South, he helped pioneer the West, and he was also the first Asian rapper. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that man, it's so much history behind him. That's why we got to tell the history of these guys. You know what I'm saying? Just like yourself, man. People got to tell the history of Alonzo and what you did for the music scene. You know, you said you got a documentary you're working on?
Yes, sir. I'm working on a documentary right now, NWA, Now Without Alonzo. It's in post-production right now. The editor got it, and we're trying to get it out hopefully by June. And also created a YouTube channel. It's called NWA Stories with Alonzo on YouTube. It's blowing up pretty well. I do a lot of interviews myself with different folks from the West Coast. And, you know, we just kicked the history from an artist's perspective. But most of the guys that I talked to so far, I have personal relationships. You know, they tell stories about the shit we did over here at the house and in the club back in the day on the West Coast. So it's, you know, it's really interesting that we're doing it from our own perspective because because we all have an intertwined history. It makes it kind of a little more different. It's different for us because we're talking about shit that we did together. You know, it just makes it interesting. That's all. It's kind of a little different.
Yeah, it's good you got that, man. I definitely got to check that out. You know, NWA
Stories with Alonzo on YouTube.
Yeah, everybody go subscribe to that.
Please do. You know,
that's huge right there. One thing I do want to ask you too, because it's quite funny. When Easy and Dre were going at it. Easy to get at you for to use the picture that he dissed him on in the inside of the It's On album. Man, what was your reaction when he came to you and like how did he come to you about that? How did that all go down?
Oh man, they called me. I had a little office and I was sitting up there one day and you got any pictures of Dre from back in the day? Yeah, what's that? I didn't know they had fell out. you know, they had fell out, and we need a picture of Dre in the suit. I'm like, whatever. And they kind of modified it a little bit. They put some extra shit on it. But, but like I told them before, man, I wasn't trying to hurt nobody. I mean, everything we did is world-class Wrecking Crew. You know, we get clowned for that shit. But I'm like, dude, we was doing that shit at the same time when Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five was wearing feathers and all kind of other crazy-ass shit. But we didn't want to get clowned. I'm like, dude, you know, but again, unlike anybody else, we the first ones that had somebody go from being wearing sequin suits to trying to being a gangster. So you got that backstory. But I'm sorry, not the only one. Tupac did the same thing. Tupac, you know, he'll tell the story in a minute. He danced in his drawers for Digital Underground, okay? But he embraced it, dealt with it, and didn't try to hide from it, try to run from it. And it all and it nobody can use it against him. But you know they act like they're ashamed of World Class Wrecking Crew. And when you and people know you got a Achilles heel, every time they want to fuck with you, they know where to kick. So they you know that was Dre's Achilles heel. Those pictures, and like I said, they gave me enough money to do license the picture. I'm sorry, I needed the money. Shit, anybody ever gave me no checks? Somebody don't give a shit about. Nobody ever gave me no loyalty check. I mean, just be cool. Nah, nigga, I got to eat too, so here.
Yeah, you did say one time that Easy was the one that came back and broke bread with you, actually in contact with you.
Yeah, Easy was at my house, I would say maybe, I don't know, maybe a month, 6 weeks before he died, dude. I mean, he's at my house on a regular basis. You know, where I live at is pretty quiet, so he can come over here and hang out. Ain't got to worry about no hood shit, no fans, nothing like that. He just come back in the studio and kick it, you know, because at that time, Yella was doing his pornos and stuff. So we had a party at my house every day just watching the pornos, not participating, just hanging out with the girls or whatever. So Easy would come by. No, I never saw him stick, you know, do nothing in the pornos, porn star. That wasn't that kind of party. But it just was fun, you know, titties everywhere, shit.
Well, you might as well. You're right there anyway. Why not? But Yella, it's funny, you know, Yella, I remember when he was doing that. As a matter of fact, Ren even recorded some music to one of them, if I'm not mistaken. He was advertising in the Murder Dog magazine. And, you know, now Yella's a religious dude, man. He's going all over the world.
Oh, man.
He's still touring. You know, do you still keep in contact with him? I know you do stuff with the homie clientele, you know, but what about, like, Yella?
I see Yella from time to time. In fact, about 2 years ago, Yella was at a church at his home church in Harbor City, California, and he was making this testimony at the church, man. It was really impressive for me because one of the first things came out of his mouth was, he wanted to say he was sorry to me in front of all them people. I'm like, dude, what are you saying you're sorry? I'm like, I'm confused. He said, man, I've just been mad at you for so long. I don't even know why, okay? I've just been mad at you, okay? And I'm like, dude, we never had a falling out, nothing like that. It's just, you know, y'all went off, made a shitload of money and forgot about me, and I was always there for everybody. I'm not mad at nobody for forgetting about me. I think it's kind of, you know, it's kind of odd that when you needed somebody, I was the first person you call. But when y'all got y'all money, I was the last person y'all thought about. But, you know, he apologized and, you know, and in front of the whole congregation, man, you know, said he wanted to apologize to me. And I was really taken by surprise.
Wow. That's interesting right there. You know what I'm saying? That's a good thing, positive thing. It's always good when people are able to make amends. Like you said, on your end, you didn't think anything was even wrong. But, you felt strong enough to want to apologize to you. That's dope. Big man of Yella to do that. But this documentary, when do you plan on having it out, man? When can we look forward to checking this out?
We're trying to get it out by June, dude. We've been working on it for about 3 years now. I got a lot of the cats in it, and so far I haven't got anybody from the crew outside of clientele and Shakespeare. Can't get Drake. Yella been busy, as he said he was gonna do it. Haven't got him in front of a camera yet, and Cube said he was gonna be a part of it also. I'm trying to hold a spot for him, but in the meantime we're just kind of cutting around to, you know, make some things happen. But you know, it's just
it's a long process, dude. You know, I had no idea that making a documentary. They told me it would take a couple of years, but I had no idea. I figured I got all the footage, I know all the people, and we should be able to do this with no problem. Shit.
Yeah.
We're still working on it.
You're right there. You know what I'm saying? You've been there since day one. You got to see the evolution of the West Coast on so many levels. Man, hey, hats off to you, man. Keep doing what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? Much success to you on the YouTube channel. Why don't you give that to everybody again so they can go hit the subscribe button.
NWA Stories with Lonzo on YouTube, folks. Check it out. I'm also on Spreaker with a podcast. So if you want to hear some of the same stories as you ride down the street or with your phone, it's the same thing. NWA Stories with Lonzo on Spreaker and on YouTube.
That's what I'm talking about right there. Thank you so much, Alonzo. I appreciate you, brother. And, man, we'll get up with you again real soon, man. You take care.
Much love, folks. Y'all be easy. Peace.